The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Well, we've made it this far.
Oh, I was waiting for something else.
Now, we've made it this far.
Yes.
Arnie has been gone for 2 weeks. He is officially en route, I believe, in the air right now and on his way back to Burlington. But he's not on the show today. So, Rich, you could be handsome and big boy.
Wow.
How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
I feel both of those things. It sure is a handsome day outside. My goodness. I was like, why don't we just do the show from the porch?
Instead of just doing a remote where we go out to a local establishment,
right,
we'll just do it from a picnic table out
right
back or something.
In 40th and Allen, out in the front field.
There's good traction there, good listener engagement.
Yes, we can just wave at the mob going by on Route 15.
The St. Mike's kids that are still here are probably on the roof drinking beers.
Yeah, or playing lacrosse in the field.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
We'll play some cornhole in between segments
sure
and things like that. So,
no, it's unbelievable out. But by the way, I just want to let you know it is Wednesday.
Yes.
If you're going to mess up the day of the week, at least say it's Friday.
Yep.
You know.
And Keith in South Burlington gets in on the Town Fair Tire text line and says that it is Wednesday all day today, not just part of the day. And then Dan in South Burlington says the mistake of the day is the day itself. Thanks, Brady. Let me know what you need for me to get that hat. Well, Dan, you've got a full day's worth of mistakes for us to potentially make. You know what happened was is that at the last second I got an email right before we were about to go on and do that SportsCenter, and I, of course, like an idiot, decided to try to read the email as I was doing SportsCenter.
Right.
And then messed up what day it was. But I'm happy that it's Wednesday, at least, and not Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, the thing is you made it really easy for people to qualify for mistake of the day. That, by the way, is the earliest ever in the show. It was the second word out of your mouth to start the show was a mistake.
Yeah, and Arnie has the computer with him. So we have the text line that you can access from that we can access remotely. So Arnie has the ability to monitor the text line. So for all I know, he's in the air right now and looking at the text line and wondering what I've done.
Well, this is coming from a guy who's never had any luck with airlines. So I suspect he's sitting in some obscure airport trying to figure out how to get to BTV.
What do you think Arnie is like trying to catch a flight? I really have an idea of what he's like, but I predict he is just the biggest hurricane, whirlwind. As bad as you could be, that's how I picture Arnie. See, I have a picture of you in the plane where it's like wearing sweatpants with Philly cheesesteak stains on them you slept in from the night before.
Right. I don't care what I look like. I'm on a plane.
Yes, and just kind of stumbling through the airport happily.
Yes. Sure.
Arnie, I predict, is he's got his glasses on his forehead because he's got his phone pressed up against his face because he's checking arrival and departures and flight notifications every 6 seconds. Then he's called his wife 4 times.
At least 4.
Then he goes to the luggage people to make sure that his luggage is safe. And then he doesn't want to check the bag because he doesn't trust anybody else to not lose it. And then he goes and finds Chinese food and ice cream, and that's how he does it.
If he ever went through what I do in the airlines on my trips, and I mean this 100% of the time, he would have lost 5 years off of his lifespan.
I'm a pretty good traveler in terms of I don't get scared of flying. I don't rush too much through the airport. I just get to my gate. I always get to my gate first, see where I am, see and then how much time I have, and then I do, you know, I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'm going to go find food.
Right.
But I feel like I'm a pretty easy flying companion. I feel like Arnie would be hard to fly with.
Absolutely. And I would be, too, because I'm always so angry in the airport, because on a day like this, they're canceling flights. It's like, why are you canceling the flight? There isn't a cloud in the sky.
Do you drink in the airport?
Never.
Because
it's so expensive.
Yeah, because it's so expensive.
And plus, I just don't. Maybe I should to numb the terror that I feel every single time I take off on a plane.
It's so funny seeing. You can tell who's been flying overnight, who works weird hours, because
droopy look.
I was coming back from the Super Bowl, and I was at Minneapolis at the airport, Minneapolis St. Paul. Flight left at like 6:30 or 7, maybe. I got there at 5:45. There were people getting hammered at the hotel at the bar there at the airport, just because you could tell that person had gotten in at like midnight and was sticking around for a while.
Right.
So,
and then the person is so hammered that he becomes belligerent at the front gate when he can't get, you know, on his flight. And it's just, it's an awful. By the way, I want to congratulate a certain Seattle Mariners pitcher. Congratulations to Mr. Paxton. That was a That was a hell of an effort last night. How many no-hitters in the franchise now? Three?
Six.
Six. That's pretty good. They haven't been around a ton of time.
Mariners now have six no-hitters. Yeah, James Paxton threw a no-hitter. And you know what's weird is we can ask Buster about this, too, when we talk to Buster only at 5 o'clock. But I do feel like no-hitters have, in one way, they've become more rare because not that no-hitters have become more rare, but complete game no-hitters have become more rare because we're so cognizant of pitch counts and we're so cognizant of rest. And then hitters, a lot of cases, maybe not in the case of the Red Sox, but a lot of teams are more passive at the plate, so pitch counts get driven higher. So, well, I feel like we have a no-hitter watch every night.
Yeah.
We don't get as many complete game no-hitters. So Paxton, to throw a complete game no-hitter last night was rare. But then you throw in the fact he did it in exactly, you know, I believe exactly 100 pitches. It was anywhere between 99 and 101, but was called 100. I mean, a complete game shutout in 100 pitches or less, that is an incredibly rare feat. So last night was a cool no-hitter, even though we see a lot of them now.
And I was sure that last batter was a base hit. He hit it really hard. Who was that? Was that
Donaldson. Donaldson.
Oh, it was Donaldson. No, but who was at third base?
Kyle Seager.
Okay, it was Seager. Great play.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, when you get down to one out left to go, you just want it at that point. Don't anybody screw up. Imagine the pressure defensively if your pitcher is throwing a perfect game.
Yeah,
not a no-hitter, but a perfect game.
It's funny. Kyle Seager said afterwards, "I want the ball hit to me, but I'd rather it be a pop-up in foul territory."
Yes.
That's what he said.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the no-hitters not very often, but that's three already. And a great trivia, there have been three no-hitters this year, and they've all been in different countries.
Yes.
So how weird is that?
There was the no-hitter by Paxton last night in Canada. There was the combined no-hitter by the Dodgers over the weekend, in which they did that in Mexico.
Yep.
And then there was Sean Manaea, who no-hit the Red Sox in Oakland. So, yeah, you're right, three no-hitters in different soils.
That's probably a record that will never be broken. Maybe tied, maybe, but...
Well, if you threw in a game... Remember, there had been the game in Puerto Rico, so they could have gotten a fourth.
But what are the odds of a no-hitter happening? I mean, it's unbelievable, but... Yeah, I figured you'd be pretty happy. I made sure I texted you immediately.
Well, I was pumped about it. I actually missed the whole game because we were at trivia last night.
That's right. How'd that go?
Oh, trivia was awesome last night. We'll get to that in a second. So we had trivia at the Burger Bar last night, and I'm following the Mariners game as kind of lukewarmly as I can in between asking questions, and I get the alert, you know, through six, through seven, through eight.
Yep.
So I start speed reading round four because I'm like, all right, now I want to get home and listen.
Hurry up and answer your question.
Because I've got I've got the MLB audio app, so I can listen in the car. I've basically got the radio.
Nice.
And so I'm like, all right, I better get in my car here by right at 9:30 because trivia goes 7:30 to 9:30. I'm like, if we get it right at 9:30 and I don't hang out and talk afterwards and I don't order a beer afterwards, I can go listen to the rest of Paxton. Game ended by like 9:10.
Yeah.
So,
isn't that beautiful when that happens?
Not when you're trying to get home for it. Like, damn you, pace of play.
If you don't know, Brady is one of the world's biggest Seattle Mariners fans.
I'm one of the only ones on the East Coast. So.
And, of course, you'll just take anything at this point.
Yes.
I mean, little victories.
20-14, Rich. 20
is that what
and,
they are?
20-14.
Wow.
So,
and Cano's back. And,
just saying. Yeah. All right, it is the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. Some of you have already gotten in for the mistake of the day, but if you're trying to get in to win that mistake of the day and qualify, if you win the mistake of the day at the end of the week, you get that exclusive 101.3 ESPN baseball cap. Thanks to Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. And, Rich, I'm going to pull an Arnie right here.
Uh-oh.
Rich, what's coming up on the show today?
Well, let me tell you, Brady. No, it's we're gonna talk. Now you had the conversation earlier with Ryan Russillo.
Yeah, earlier today I had a chance to talk to Ryan Russillo, and it all came together really late. You and I were actually here hanging out earlier in the studio, real early in the morning. You stayed later in your morning shift, and I ended up getting in touch with Ryan. Now UVM grad, former ESPN radio host, I ended up getting in touch with him at like 11 o'clock, and you had just left. And he goes to me, he goes, "When's the earliest you can tape something?" And I go, "Well, we can tape right now if you want to just feel bad Rich isn't here."
Yeah.
So I spoke to Ryan Russillo, and we actually did it in two parts. So we're going to play part one here in the Huddle in about 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Then what else after that?
Yeah, because we saw him on Church Street, and then it was like, oh, where'd he go?
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's moved on. But Greg Wyshynski, one of my favorite people who just articulates the sport of hockey so beautifully. I'm looking forward to him, the ESPN guy who talks hockey, and we'll talk NHL playoffs and whether or not things like whether it's a good thing to have, you know, Nashville and Winnipeg that are still both in
and
it.
What the Bruins should do.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking original six masterpiece teams here. It's none of that anymore, and whether that's a good thing. We'll talk a lot about the Bruins. Maybe we'll throw a Habs question in there, too. My favorite part of the week, Buster Olney, just after 5 o'clock, and a million questions, including regarding Alex Cora and the way he handled that job last night. I was not happy.
You are not happy about that. And I am outraged at NBA coaches. So that's going to come up at the end of the show, but I am so mad with NBA coaches. But first, you know, Arnie's not here, but we get this. Even though he's not here, we've got a topic courtesy of him. So I posted last night on Twitter that David Price was going to get scratched from his start now today.
Yep.
And now we have since found out that he's got a mild case of carpal tunnel syndrome. We'll ask Buster kind of what he knows in an hour. But Arnie tweeted me back and said, biggest waste of money in baseball, David Price. 7 years, $217 million. So I started thinking about it. Is David Price, is he actually the biggest waste of money in all of baseball? 802-655-6672. You can get in, because there's a lot of people who are up for this dubious title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To me, I could think of at least five that are way worse off than David Price.
And at least two Red Sox. At least.
Really?
So one who is playing for the Pawtucket Red Sox.
Oh,
yes.
So you think Rusnik Castillo is a worse deal than David Price?
Well, I mean, Rusnik Castillo, I don't know. What was his deal? There's $75 million or something?
Yeah,
for
I think
He's just sitting in Pawtucket playing very, very well. Meanwhile, Jackie Bradley Jr. is hitting, you know, 0-0-1 and is an automatic out. But they're stuck. I don't know if you know the details. Maybe I'll ask Buster.
I do.
As to why Rusnik Castillo cannot play at Fenway Park.
So Rusnik Castillo, and you are right, I have Rusnik Castillo on the short list of contracts that are definitely worse off than David Price.
And he's hitting like crazy at Pawtucket. He's the only one doing anything.
So the reason why is Rusnik Castillo, I want to say it was like a 6 or 7 year deal for $75
million. Yeah.
The reason why Rusnik Castillo cannot come up to the Red Sox is because they are trying to stay under the luxury tax. If Rusnik Castillo comes up to the major league roster for even one day, his yearly salary now counts towards your total payroll. If they stash him in AAA, that number that they are still paying him, it does not count in their payroll. If they bring him up for even one day, well, now they're going to blow past the luxury tax.
Boy, that's a tricky one for John Henry and the crew, and I would assume that there's no chance that happens. But when you've got a guy like Jackie Bradley, look, and I understand he's great defensively, but at what point do the 0-for-4s have to stop? And, I mean, he struck out three more times last night in three at-bats. I know he walked the last time, but what's he hitting right now, about 170?
Yeah, and
it's getting down to that point where you've got to really start thinking about the fact that this guy has become an automatic out in the lineup.
Well, he's hitting 0-88 against lefties, I think I read, and they let him, to your point, they let him bat yesterday against Chapman in the ninth, and even though he got on, who else do you have on the Red Sox that's a worse contract than David Price?
Hanley.
Oh, stop. See, that's different, though. David Price he's in the middle of a 7-year deal.
Right. This is it for Hanley.
This is it for Hanley.
I will say, although I think he's about to go off the cliff, I think he'll be hitting 250 in the blink of an eye. He has produced to a point. At least he's giving you something.
When I look at the biggest waste of money in baseball, I'm looking at the biggest waste of money currently and towards the future. Now, you might not like the Hanley investment, but it's almost over.
Yep.
The Dustin Pedroia investment at this point, I don't love what's left. But it's only 4 years left. Now, it's 4 years and $64 million. That's not nothing. But here, let me give you some names of people that are worse off than David Price right now. Because I still think David Price can come back and be serviceable.
You know I feel that way.
So yeah. I think he can be serviceable. I don't think he's in the waste of money yet. He's just frustrating at the moment. How about Chris Davis of the Orioles? He is signed through 2022. At $23 million a year,
he can't hit 180.
He can't hit his way out of a paper bag, and he strikes out 9,000 times per year, and he doesn't even hit the 50 homers anymore that he used to.
Right.
So they are a team in Baltimore that is going to be forced to rebuild and trade off Manny Machado. They won't be able to move Chris Davis because of that contract.
They're going to have to figure out a way to package something, and it might even be Machado involved in this, and get Davis in that package, i.e. how they did the Josh Beckett, Adrian Gonzalez, Carl Crawford to the Dodgers sort of thing, because they are an absolute disaster right now at Camden Yards.
But that's different, though, I think, again, because in that era, we're talking about a decade ago, that luxury tax concern wasn't there. So you talk about teams that could take on a Chris Davis, i.e. the Yankees, i.e. the Red Sox, i.e. the Dodgers, the Nationals. They're not going to take on that excess money because then they're going to blow past the luxury tax. Also, how about Jason Hayward? Jason Hayward is a part-time spare part for the Cubs. $23 million a year through 2023.
It's going to work if you can get it.
So you talk about a guy who is going to play half the games this year, and also we're now applauding if he hits 261 right. with no power and a little bit of speed. That's a waste of a contract.
That was a gamble. He had only had one or two decent years in Atlanta before the Cubs jumped. All it takes is 1 year, and people just go crazy in baseball.
But you know who I think the two worst contracts in baseball are? And one of them, I'm going to look right over the lake at all of our Yankee fans. The fact that Jacoby Ellsbury is still going to make $22 million a year for the next 3.5 seasons, you have a really exciting young team in New York. Jacoby Ellsbury is not young. He's not exciting. And all he's doing is blocking Clint Frazier's path back to the major leagues, who is young and exciting. So when you throw in that money for a team that has done a good job over the last 2 years at shedding payroll and making smart moves to and using their payroll, and you want to go out and get a Bryce Harper, a Manny Machado in the offseason, this guy taking up $22 million a year for the next three full seasons after this one, that is an albatross that you can't possibly get out of.
And it's funny because I remember when he went to the Yankees, and I was just like, oh, damn, really? I hate to
lose wanted him on the Mariners, too.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought, yeah, a lot of these guys to me made sense. And a lot of these people on this list had just come off of really good career-type years. So it's not necessarily a horrible move. It's just that either injuries or complete ineffectiveness or both have derailed these guys.
And these contracts were given out, in some cases, even just 3-4 years ago, but pre-sabermetric contract value. The freeze that we saw in the free agent market this offseason, this is a direct result of these contracts. Teams are not willing to give out this kind of money. J.D. Martinez had to sweat it out until February just to get 5-for-120 with a couple of player options. Imagine J.D. Martinez on the market 4 years ago. What he would have, I mean, he would have gotten Chris Davis money, and that's how it was back then. Even now, so what has happened now is a direct result of these contracts. But the worst contract in all of baseball we haven't even mentioned yet. Miguel Cabrera is hands down the worst contract in baseball.
And it's so weird because he and Pujols is right up there too. I think he's signed for another 3 or 4 years at $24 million a year, but Cabrera is at $31 million a year.
And
he's currently injured.
Yeah.
And he did get off to a good start, I know, because I've got him on my fantasy team. And he was, you know where I got him? On the waiver wire.
People won't even, and you know what, usually I balk at you talking about your fantasy teams, but the fact that Miguel Cabrera 3 years ago was a number one pick in fantasy drafts and now is undrafted has shown you how far he has fallen. I mean, he doesn't hit 330 anymore. He doesn't hit 40 homers anymore. He doesn't play elite defense. I'm not going to say he's overweight, but he's not going to offer you any speed and athleticism. And he's making $31 million, and he's signed for another, looks like, until 2020, after the 2023 season. I mean, how old is Miguel Cabrera right now? Like 34,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he started very young, and he was instantly good.
So we're talking about a guy who's already an albatross around your neck at 34. Yeah. What's he going to be at 40 when this keeps going? It's going to get real ugly for Miguel Cabrera. But he is the worst contract
in baseball. I'll go back to what I said, though, is the fact that he was absolutely one of the hottest hitters in baseball when they signed that deal. I think that was a Dombrowski move, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But look, he was. But you're talking about, at that point, major league teams were willing to pay for past performance. And Miguel Cabrera got a 10-year deal at age 31, something like that. I mean, look up how old Miguel Cabrera is, okay?
All right.
So he got a 10-year deal. It's somewhere between 29 and 31. And you're seeing now that you just can't be good for that long. I look at Robinson Cano, who got a 10-year deal at 30 with the Mariners, and I say I hope he's really good for 3 years, useful for 3 years, and then falls off a cliff for the last four. That's what I'm just hoping for. Now teams, they're going to give you what they think you are valued moving forward. That is where teams have smartened up.
He's 35.
Okay, so so he got a 10-year deal at 31?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. So
it is, but I think he just overwhelmed Dombrowski and that whole front office with past performance. I mean, look at his stats with the Marlins, and I understand, but that's where you got to draw the line.
Look at his stats with the Marlins. He'd been in Detroit for like 100 years before that.
I see what you mean. He'd already been, but he was highly effective in Detroit when he signed up. But you're right. You got to draw the line at some point and not say, I'm giving you 10 years. They're going to pay him $30 million a year until he's 41. He's already done.
Gabe Winooski says Matt Harvey is a waste of money. Well, number one, Matt Harvey doesn't make any money. He only makes $5 million this year. Number two, he's not on the Mets anymore. They traded him to Cincy. And Doug in Champlain says, couldn't agree more with Jacoby Ellsbury being a waste of money. Yankee fan here. All right, that's it for segment number one. Let's get to segment number two when we come back. Part one of my talk earlier today with UVM grad and former ESPN radio host Ryan Russillo, right here on The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN.
Back to The Huddle, where you can give us your take at 802-655-6672. Providing Arnie shuts up long enough to let you get a sentence in. 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back here in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Playoff basketball tonight, Celtics game 5 against the Sixers, trying to close it out. We'll have the coverage for you 7:30 with the pregame over on AM 960 The Zone. And who better to talk basketball with, but who better just to catch up with than former host of the Ryan Russillo Show, our buddy UVM graduate Ryan Russillo. Ryan, how are you? Good to talk to you again.
I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're great. Finally, some nice weather out here today. 83 at one point, I think it got to today. But we're not living it up quite like you are. So let's kind of backtrack here. You leave the Ryan Russillo Show in December, I think it was. Kind of catch us up on what you're doing now.
Well, I moved out to Los Angeles, and that part has been awesome. Staring out the window at the ocean right now. So I've always wanted to do this. I always wanted to live here. And I'm still doing the podcast for ESPN, which has been cool. And I think they kind of understood where I was coming from. I mean, you guys know what it's like every day for a radio show. Obviously, there are tougher jobs. But I've done it every day for pretty much every day since I'd left Burlington, except for that first year when I was doing minor league baseball trying to figure it out. So from 2003 on, I'd done a radio show for the most part every single day. And I wanted to try something different. So I'm still doing the podcast with them. I'm doing actually an NBA show with ESPN still, which is kind of funny because I found out last night I had to fly back to Bristol for 2 weeks. But that's all right. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm doing some writing for television. So that was really the big reason why I wanted to move to Los Angeles and give this a shot. And I think in a way when I lived in Burlington in 2001 and said, screw it, I'm going to try to be a sports guy, I think the same thing is kind of fueling me the last year, because I don't know, maybe I went one for one on that, and I'm hoping to go two for two. So I'll still always do some sort of sports related thing, but I'm trying a completely different career here that I've never done before, and we'll see how it goes.
You were out here doing the show in October, and we had a blast having you over at Red Square, and you spoke, you ended your show that day with about 10 minutes talking about your journey to where you had gotten in sports. Did you know at that point, even though you were talking about how appreciative you were of your career and your journey, did you know at that point you were a little bit burnt out on the radio scene, or did it come kind of to a head, all in that 2 months difference?
Well, there was definitely a way, we could have figured out, a way to stay. I mean, they made me an offer, and it was a very fair offer. But, my show was going to a different time slot, and I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much it. Yeah, I mean, look, I could have done radio for the next 20 years. I could have. I mean, so to say, oh, I was just so burnt out, I was waking up. I'm saying, like, after the fact of doing it, it was, it's really hard to tell somebody that's doing physical labor, and I've done it, that your job is talking sports every day is a hard job. But it is a very consuming job, at least it was for me. Like, I wasn't good at just coming home and turning it off and driving into work and flipping the dials and going, all right, maybe I'll talk about this or talk about that. I mean, every moment I was awake, I was kind of thinking about what I was going to do, trying to figure out the best way to do the 3 hours. So, I think at this point, like to say when I was in Burlington that I knew I was done. No, I wouldn't say that, but this wasn't some overnight decision either. I lived in Connecticut for 9 years. I wanted to try something different. And like I said, I'm looking at the waves right now. So far, so good.
Yeah, so far, so good. So you're going to be writing a sitcom, a movie, a play? What are we going to be seeing from you in the future?
It's going to be a play. It's going to be a two-person. Are you guys kidding? we don't know yet. I mean, I'm writing my own stuff. So it's not, it's very subjective. It's much like doing radio, where I've had bosses who think I'm incredible, and I've heard about other bosses that thought I was awful at my job. So I'm sure it'll be the same way, and somebody will read something you write and go, this is boring, and no one will like it, and then a different producer can read it and say, this is terrific. So I don't know. I don't know yet. I'm not being naive about it. It's really, really hard. There are people who have been doing a lot longer than me that have never sold anything, never been picked up for, you know, there are great shows that we hear about all the time, like Mad Men was walking around Los Angeles for, you know, I guess that guy was trying to pitch it for like 10 years. So I don't go into this thinking that like I'm just going to get off the plane and start killing it. I know it's really hard, and that's why I know there'll always be some element of sports that I keep doing, because I still love sports, and there's also a scenario too where maybe something works out here. So this new NBA Hoop Streams Twitter show that we're doing, we did the first one this weekend and it was really good. So I mean, it's not like I've only missed one of the playoff games, and it's not even, you know, like there's one T-Wolves Rockets game I haven't watched.
Yeah.
So it's not like I've just turned it off.
Ryan Russillo, UVM grad, with us here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. Let's get to the NBA then for a sec. Celtics trying to close out the Sixers tonight. Go figure, in a series with all the star power that we have in this series, we're talking about TJ McConnell and Shane Larkin's impacts going into this game. But what do you make of Game 5 tonight?
I actually think this series can get weird here if the Celtics were to lose this one, like historically weird. Now, I mean, it'd be one thing, especially with a young team like Philadelphia, to win, but I've been just thrown off by this whole thing, because I'm still of the camp of, like, Brad Stevens is basketball Belichick here. He's somebody that every time you go, okay, well, they can't possibly figure this thing out, or this roster's too screwed up now, they figure it out. I mean, Kyrie is out. I mean, if you look at the beginning of the year, Gordon goes down, they have to kind of reinvent themselves on the fly. Then Kyrie goes down, and it's working out okay, and then he's out for the entire season, so you're now going into the playoffs, and you're trying to figure out, like, are they going to win in the first round? And then Rozier turns into a stud. Tatum are rookies. We knew he was awesome. I loved him. I know how talented he is. And then, you know, Horford, who I've always defended, I think anybody, even the biggest Al fan, can admit there's certain nights where he isn't aggressive enough. And you don't know what you're going to get. I mean, he was an incredible Game 7 against the Bucks, and then he was scoreless in the first half of Game 2 against Philly, Game 3 against Philly, and then, you know, wasn't great Game 4. So I look at that roster, well, the two best players are on Philadelphia's team. They rolled through that Heat team, which I probably made the mistake of thinking they were a little bit better than we thought. And so I thought Boston would win Game 1 and Philly would win the series in 7, maybe 6. But now it's been just shocking to see the Celtics just own them, you know, and those rookie mistakes that we didn't see in the first round from the Sixers. And, you know, we can get into the semantics of Simmons being a rookie, or, you know, Embiid, but Embiid prior to this year only played 31 games.
Yeah.
Saric is pretty good. You know what I mean? Like, the whole point was that it's just turned into this argument now. So as I presented it, like, here we go again with Brad Stevens, this is incredible. And then, you know, talking about how great this Sixers roster is, the Celtics go up 3-0, and now all I'm hearing from everybody is that the Celtics are loaded with lottery picks and that Horford's awesome. And I'm like, wait a minute, I like Horford a ton, but I've never heard any of, like, no one was taking Horford over Embiid or Simmons.
Yeah.
So I think this series has a chance to get kind of scary for Celtics fans, and I could also see Boston at home, you know, taking it to them, that crowd. And if Simmons and Embiid keep closing out these games and looking like rookies, even though, again, I know, you know, Embiid isn't, and it's just Simmons' first year playing. It's been a very confusing series, at least for me personally. And it means that I'm so impressed with what the Celtics continue to do. Like, every single thing that looks bad. I mean, Jalen's hamstring and not being ready at the beginning of the series. You go, they can't get through this. And then they do.
All right, that was part one.
He's right.
Of my talk earlier with Ryan Russillo. The part two will air at 6:05 at the beginning of Champlain Valley game night. So, Rich, Russillo says that he thinks if the Celtics lose today, it could get historically weird. Are you nervous about them collapsing, an all-timer collapse?
Yeah, well, I was watching, of all people, Kevin Garnett. He had a...
Area 21?
A video podcast or something. I have no idea what I'm talking about in that. But and he said, absolutely, this series will go 7 if the Sixers win tonight. And I have no reason to doubt him. I remember when they won Game 3, I just kept thinking, this is way too easy. This is a good team. I know they're young and they're making a lot of mistakes. But they better be careful here. I am not that worried about tonight because look what the Celtics have been at home. If there's any sport where being at home makes an enormous difference, it's basketball. And I just think the Garden's roof is going to be coming off tonight.
And you talk about being at home, it makes a huge difference being at home for Terry Rozier. I think guard play today is the key to the game. And guard play is the key to a lot of NBA games, but in a series where you've got Horford and Embiid saying, you know, playing such big roles, it's not always the big part of this series. But tonight, I think it is. Terry Rozier averages 23 points a game at home. He only averages 13 on the road. He's significantly better at the Garden. If he comes out and plays better again tonight, they have an exponentially better chance to win. Conversely, Shane Larkin's not playing. And on the surface, that doesn't seem like a huge loss because he doesn't score a lot for Boston. But when you talk about the depth being challenged, it is stretched uber thin right now. It is Terry Rozier, and that is essentially it in that Celtics backcourt.
Yeah, and we'll see. I think there are certain guys. I can't imagine McConnell's going to go off for 27 or whatever tonight with that in a situation like that. The guy I really think is going to be flustered tonight again is Ben Simmons. I mean, that crowd is going to be deafening a half an hour before he even hits the floor. And we've seen in the past the difference between him and Philadelphia and certainly him and Boston coming off that one-point game. I just think he's still young, and I think he's gonna be hearing it big time tonight, and I think it's going to get to him.
Don't discount McConnell's impact. Whether he scores 18 points or not, I'm not as interested in. But just how he opens up the floor and how he opens up the game for Simmons. I watched a ton of highlights in Game 4 to see exactly what was happening. So when Ben Simmons carries the ball up the court, the Celtics defense just runs under the hoop and basically says, you're going to run and meet us here because you're not going to pull up from three on us.
Right.
So you're going to run into this giant wall that we have at the hoop, and then you're going to be stuck. With McConnell, they have to at least respect what he does from the outside. So the defense pulls out higher, meets him at the three-point line, and then all of a sudden the interior of the lane is much more open, and then you get some drive and kick opportunities, and then Simmons is free to roam and do what he does best, which is attack the rim, maybe in a slasher mentality. So don't discount McConnell's impact.
I'll believe it when I see it. I just think home court in this case makes a lot more than 3 points difference.
I think the Celtics win tonight, but I'm just saying if the Sixers lose, it's not going to be because T.J. McConnell was awful. I think T.J. McConnell is going to have a big impact tonight. I think he's going to play well.
It's hard to say what he's going to be. What is he, the fourth best player on the team? I mean, that's like
he's way worse than that, but
That's like saying I think that
Marcus Smart
is going to have a huge game tonight. Absolutely. So, it's the same idea.
You're in the huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Donald in Georgia says he misses Russillo's show and he appreciated listening to him. Well, part two tonight in Champlain Valley game night. We talk a little hoop. Rich, now we go to your thing. We go to the ice. What do the Bruins need to do this offseason? Greg Wyshynski of ESPN is with us next on the huddle.
Lines are now open. Get ready to call in at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back here to The Huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Getting ready to kick off Hour 2. Arnie and Root in on a plane right now back to Burlington. And it's been a beautiful day today, but when Arnie comes back, it's just going to get cloudy again. I can already tell.
he's like a pig pen, except it's not dirt. It's a cloud.
He just brings that aura. Yeah. And Al's French Fries is going to do great business when Arnie gets back to town. So, Rich, it's your favorite time of the week. It's my favorite time of the week. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line now and find ourselves our ESPN MLB insider, Buster Olney. Buster, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. What's going on?
Go ahead,
and Buster, we were saying, I was talking to him before we went on here, what a night this would be. This is one of those few nights where you wish, the New York Penn League started with the rest of the minor league teams. There aren't many nights I feel that way, Buster, but I don't know what it's like where you are, but it couldn't be better here.
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous. We're just north of New York City. It's a beautiful day. I was out mowing the lawn for the first time today. after the long winter and the cold temperatures, boy, did that feel good. And I agree with you. I've got a couple more radio hits after you guys, and then after that, my son and I are going to go out and play wiffle ball before we sit down for the Braves game tonight because he's a big Braves fan, and of course, Red Sox and Yankees.
Wow, yeah.
Living the dream! Wow,
Buster, I got to ask you. So James Paxton throws a no-hitter yesterday for my Mariners, and
baby.
So I'm very pumped about that, but I can't say anything good about it because last week I told you that Edwin Diaz was Cy Young and then he blew two saves. So it's bad luck if I talk good. But every single night now there seems to be a no-hitter alert coming to my phone. Do you get excited for no-hitters still? Or are we just like, I don't want to say are they becoming commonplace, but I feel like there's a no-hitter threat every night.
I wrote a piece for ESPN.com that was posted on Sunday. Last week I asked executives around baseball who are building teams and making decisions based on analytics and essentially asking them, do you like the product that you're creating? And let me make this clear. I'm not bashing analytics. The numbers are the numbers, and statistics like performance against first starting pitcher against the lineup third time through, that is indisputable. The statistical advantage you get by bringing in a parade of relievers, that there are numbers backing that. However, where we are in the game today, it's a concern because, in my opinion, it's not as watchable. The pitching is becoming so ridiculously dominant, it's crazy. A couple of numbers. To your point about no-hitters, think about this. In 2017, there were 24 games in which a pitcher carried a no-hitter through six innings.
Wow.
Guys, we've had this year 22 already. Oh. 22 already of pitchers taken through six innings. Paxton throws one last night, and right after that, the immortal Jeremy Hellickson throws six perfect games. Yeah. Against the San Diego Padres. How about this number? In 2014, there were about 6,000 pitches thrown a baseball 98 miles per hour plus. 6,000 pitches, 98 mile an hour plus. We are on a pace in 2018 for that number to jump to over 20,000.
Unbelievable.
Threefold in 4 years, and what we're seeing are record-setting number of strikeouts. In theory, Paxton's no-hitter last night was special. Because he's from Canada, he did it in Toronto. He was totally dominant from beginning to end. Great play by my cousin Kyle Seager in the middle of it. That was all spectacular. But then you have the combined no-hitter the Dodgers had against the Padres last week. And I got to be honest, watching it was kind of a yawn.
Yeah.
Every night we're seeing all these strikeouts and hitters walking back to the dugout and faceless, nameless relievers coming in. It's not as compelling as when we all grew up and you focused on the ace starting pitchers.
Buster, the thing about last night's no-hitter that did make it special for me was, one, he threw the rare, now complete game no-hitter, to your point, and two, he did it in 100 pitches, which is incredibly rare. I don't remember if it was you who tweeted this recently or somebody else, so forgive me, but are we going to get to the point now where we just do three-inning segments for pitchers where we don't even have a starting pitcher that goes seven? We just do three innings for this guy and three innings for that guy and three innings for another guy. Is that coming soon?
I don't know if we're going to get to that point because, trying to sustain that over courses of the season would be difficult. But there's no question that starting pitchers are becoming less and less relevant, which, in my opinion, is, just in terms of being a consumer of Major League Baseball, that's a problem. Because, when I grew up, Louis Tiant, Tom Seaver, Bob Gibson, those guys were like the Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giants of the sport, Pedro Martinez, Roger Clemens, Randy Johnson, that's what you look forward to. But now, through the use of analytics, you're seeing most starting pitchers, 4 2/3, 5 innings, then you go to 3 or 4 relievers, you're all thrown as hard as they can for 2 or 3 batters, and I just think it's changing the sport so much. I don't know how they reverse this trend without a major rule change. Like, for example, what if you made a rule telling all managers, except with exceptions of injuries and blowout situations, you can only use 4 pitchers in a game? Yeah. I think at some point Major League Baseball is going to need a dramatic rule change to combat the trends they're in right now.
Buster, it's funny because just checking out that Mets-Reds game tonight, and you know where I'm going with this, but
yes.
I mean, last week we talked about things that we've never seen. Turns out today the Mets bat out of order in the first inning, and the worst guy I felt bad for was Jay Bruce, who comes in at 2:33 and is out before he even steps into the box, as it turns out.
Yeah, and it was because the lineup that was given, I believe that the chain of command was, Mickey Callaway gave a lineup to one of his coaches, I think Ruben Amaro, and Ruben typed it into the computer, and he typed it in wrong. And after the game, Mickey Callaway completely owned it and said, it's my job as the administrator to double-check it and triple-check it and make sure that we're right. As we've talked about in past weeks, Mickey's never managed before this year, so he's not necessarily in that habit. And Mickey, to his credit, after the game, told reporters how angry he was at himself. He said, you know, I probably cost us the game today. To your point, he cost Jay Bruce an at bat. Jay was not happy. The video of him in the dugout when he found out what happened, where he's charged with an hitless at bat without even stepping out of the dugout. After the game, when reporters went to him, he said, I have no answers.
Buster Olney of ESPN with us. Only the Mets, Rich. Only the Mets. Buster Olney with us on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. We were talking about this at the start of the show. Arnie, who's traveling back today from L.A., he said yesterday he thinks David Price is the biggest waste of money in baseball. I can think of about 10 bigger, worse contracts, bigger waste of money than David Price. But for your money, who do you think is the worst contract right now in baseball? I know that we threw that one at you at the without any warning. So I got about 10 guys I could throw at you if you need a little recollection.
Well, I mean, and if we're just talking about current players, look, the moment that I heard about Miguel Cabrera's extension, like this massive, and I can't remember that, it was like 12 years, $250 million, it was ridiculous. And I was getting texts and phone calls from executives of other teams saying, what are they doing? It was like pouring money down a drain. The Albert Pujols contract, where he got 10 years and $240 million from the Angels, and Albert, you know, just past 3,000 hits. He's going to go down in history. He's one of the great right-handed hitters. He's in year seven of a 10-year deal, okay? They still have something close to $100 million that they owe him, and that's not going to turn out well. David's, look, given his current trajectory, some of the physical problems that he has, he would certainly be in the conversation. I think Jason Hayward of the Cubs at this point is in the conversation. 8 years and $184 million, and probably you know, the fact that Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein keep talking about his defense and base running is not a good thing. I did tell you about how Jason's performed for them so far. Great guy, works hard, but he just hasn't hit.
And speaking of David Price and his carpal tunnel syndrome, I mean, I haven't heard that one yet with when it comes to a pitcher. I mean, how is this going to work? Is he going to wake up when it's his turn in the rotation that day and report to Alex Cora and say, yeah, it's good today, send me out there?
I'm not sure. To be honest with you, there's so many things with his medical situation that we don't know. And I always say, I think it's every player's right to withhold medical information, and it's our right to speculate based on the information that we have. Based on the information we have, it's trending in a really bad direction. His velocity's down. You could see the way he was pitching. He wasn't nearly as effective, and let's face it, right now, mostly for David Price, but also for the other Red Sox left-handers, they do not match up well with the Yankees because the Yankees have these right-handed bashers in the middle of their lineup between Gary Sanchez, who Gary Sanchez's numbers alone would have been excused not to pitch David Price. What is he, 6-for-10 with 5 homers against him? And, Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge, it is absolutely a major concern. And I know, there have been stories written, will David Price opt out at the end of the year? Only if he's willing to walk away from $100 million.
Yeah.
Be my guest, David.
Hey, Buster, let me ask you this. Because we're in such a unique position with how many teams are so bad and how many teams think they're in the race, I think it's going to make the trade deadline activity really, really fascinating. I'm under the assumption that the Red Sox are going to need another pitcher. Who's available? Is there a frontline ace available early? Because, could Cole Hamels be coming to Boston because Texas is so bad? Are we looking at fourth and fifth starters from the Chicago White Sox, possibly?
Yeah, and generally speaking, the early forecast I've heard from general managers is they do not think the starting pitching trade market is going to be good. You could see some creative teams that would have an opportunity. For example, 2 weeks ago, I just speculated that the Giants should put Madison Bumgarner out there if their season starts to turn south. I don't think that's going to happen. An interesting guy to me is Patrick Corbin of the Diamondbacks. Arizona's in first place, but Patrick's a free agent at year's end. Maybe it would make sense for them to, before he walks out the door, take advantage of his value and then trade for another starting pitcher to take his place in the rotation, if I'm making sense. Here's the problem for the Red Sox. We've seen it in past years, back in 2008, 2009, when trade situations popped up. The Red Sox were always in front of the Yankees in the pecking order, in the line, because they had more prospects, they had more payroll flexibility. Well, guess what? This summer, it's not even close. The Yankees, among all teams in baseball, if a frontline starting pitcher comes out there and is in the market, the Yankees will be in a tremendous position to add a starting pitcher because of how loaded they are in the farm system and because of all the payroll flexibility built in the way they got under the luxury tax.
Yay, not.
I know.
And it just happened so quickly. Hey, listen, Buster, we debated this yesterday, and it kind of stemmed from a conversation that you were having actually on Twitter. Is Mookie Betts now better than Mike Trout?
Yeah, and that's what a National League evaluator said to me the other day. And I got to tell you, I did it kind of a double take, and I was like, "You mean when if you besides Trout?" And he goes, "No, like all players." And you know, I thought about it, and I will tell you that I don't think it's an unreasonable thought because Mookie is such a dominant defender, and Mike Trout's an excellent defender, but Mookie Betts is as Buck Showalter said, maybe the best right fielder that he's ever seen. He is a dominant base runner. So is Trout. I personally would pick Trout, but I don't think that that statement is as crazy as I know the reaction that I got. Mookie Betts is having an unbelievable season, and so is Mike Trout this season. The amazing thing, I talked with the GM with another team today about Trout. What's incredible is his drive to get better. If you look at his career numbers, it's like looking up the side of a pyramid. I mean, it is straight uphill in terms of his performance year after year. He just gets better and better and better. Mookie, right now, though, if the vote for American League MVP were to be taken today, he would be the guy.
Buster Olney, ESPN MLB insider, with us on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Buster, we'll get you out of here on two more questions. Gleyber Torres has been phenomenal, as we thought he would be coming up to the Yankees, although I don't know that anybody anticipated to be this good this quick. With all the young talent in the game right now, and you talk about the Braves, they've got a bunch of them, where does Gleyber Torres rank in terms of when you hear people talking about young talent, where is he in the conversation?
He's in the top 10. You know, when that trade went down for Rolas Chapman, you know, I talked to people in the Cubs front office, and they acknowledged quickly the Yankees picked the right guy. If you guys remember at that time when that trade went down, the Cubs were saying, look, we're not going to trade Kyle Schwarber to you. We're going to take two or three other guys off. But they gave up Gleyber Torres. Privately, they're hoping the Yankees would pick somebody else. Hmm. Do I think he's as dynamic as Acuna of the Braves? I don't. You know, I personally love watching Ozzie Albies, the Braves second baseman, but Gleyber Torres, you talk about field presence, you talk about comfort level as a young player. He kind of reminds you, if you guys remember that, what was it, the 2013 postseason when Xander Bogaerts stepped in to play third base and he looked like he'd played 10 years in the big leagues. That's how Gleyber Torres looks right now.
Buster, so last question. We're going to tell this funny anecdote about Ichiro and Tom Brady in the next segment, so I won't spoil it for everybody, but it came from Peter Gammons today. So I just want to ask you, is Ichiro's in this kind of nebulous position that he's in where he's half a player and half a front office guy? What was it like for you covering Ichiro? Because he feels like just a reclusive superstar that I wish I like had any insight on. What was it like for you guys up close?
Yeah, and I will say, I mean, Peter has a tremendous relationship with him, and I was not able to forge that type of relationship. I did a long piece on it for the New York Times when I was working for the Times back in 2001, and it did feel like you were trying to get an audience with the Pope, because he was so serious about his work, and he kept all reporters at arm's length. And by the way, that's not a criticism. That's just an observation, and that's, you know, how he went about his business. But you heard so many stories, especially in the last 6 or 7 years, really, Brady, after he left Seattle, how he seemed to loosen up and get more at ease. And I'm sure I've told you this anecdote before, but I'm going to say it again. It's my favorite one about Ichiro. His first year with the Mariners, they're playing the Yankees. Alfonso Soriano is the Yankee second baseman at the time. And Soriano had played as a teenager in Japan after growing up in Dominican. And so Ichiro gets to second base in his first plate appearance. And he looks at Alfonso in Spanish and goes, ¿Qué pasa? And then he gets to second base again the next time. He looks at him and says in English, what's happening? And then he gets to second base a third time up, and that's the first time that he spoke Japanese to him and then tells Soriano he knew that he played in Japan, and they got into a nice conversation in Japanese. I mean, he really does have a great and funny personality that he, you know, for the most part, I think he still does most of his interviews in English through a translator, despite the fact that everyone says he speaks English totally fine and understands English, but he just, I think for his public face, would prefer not to make a mistake.
Buster Olney. Buster, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. And Arnie will be back, so I'm sure you'll have an outlandish question for you next week.
Oh, man. But, you know, he always inspires my stories.
Enjoy your wiffle ball.
There we go. Thank you.
Thanks, yeah. Buster.
See ya.
All right, there he goes, Buster Olney of ESPN.
Yeah. Just driving by wherever he lives, and hey, the guy mowing the lawn. Isn't that Buster Olney?
Do you think you could recognize Buster Olney if you just walked you on the street?
If I saw him on the street, yes. Obviously, okay. Mowing his lawn, no.
You know, I don't want to be knee-jerk reaction guy, but I do think that he's right. I think that baseball is on the verge of needing a rule change in some way that helps make the product more watchable. And I'm 1-0 baseball doesn't bother me. And again, when it's your favorite sport, 1-0 of anything doesn't bother you. When it's not your favorite sport, people find 1-0 of anything boring. I will tell you, 1-0 soccer to me is not as exciting as 5-4. If I'm going to watch soccer, I need goals. You will tell me 1-0 hockey is the most exhilarating thing ever, especially if it comes in the playoffs.
Yes.
I'll tell you, I need 6-5 if I'm going to really, really get into it. So I get it. I like 1-0 baseball. Most people would rather see 11-8 with 4 home runs. And we're not in that place right now in the game. And it is getting more and more difficult to make the game watchable.
And the Red Sox are a prime example. How many games? I look at the, you know me, I'm a box score guy. And I look, and it seems like every night there's somewhere between 9 and 15 strikeouts. I mean, you know, as good as some of these guys are, you know, like a guy like J.D. Martinez, he's striking out every night. I don't know what his percentage is, and he's having a great year. Ben Attendi, all of a sudden, is swinging and missing and everything. And let's not even talk about the bottom of the order. They can't hit a volleyball.
Well, when everybody is throwing 100 miles an hour, and when the starter is going to go 5 innings, and then the next 4 innings are going to be guys throwing 100 miles an hour, it is difficult. So hitters have made the decision that we don't think we're going to put together 14 hits a night anymore. We'll take 6 hits and hope that they're a bunch of home runs, and that's how we're going to score. And that's a dangerous game to be playing. That makes for a generally boring game.
Yeah, that except at Camden Yards last night.
Yes.
Did you see? I mean, how low have the Baltimore Orioles fallen? The Kansas City Royals, who had for a while, I don't know if they still do, the worst record in baseball, put up a 10 spot in the top of the first inning at Baltimore last night. How do you think those fans are doing?
They had 4 homers without an out.
In the first inning, before they made their first out. We're talking about the Royals here.
All right, remember what's coming up on Champlain Valley Game Night tonight. Will be a part 2 of our talk with Ryan Russillo from earlier today.
Yeah, can I just do this? Brady, what's happening tonight on Champlain Valley Game Night?
Part 2, Ryan Russillo. He will be on at 6:05. Remember, mistake of the day, if you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. Brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. When we come back, we'll tell you the funny anecdote about Ichiro and Tom Brady. And then a part of the Tom Brady conversation we didn't really get into yesterday that I think is important to address. That's next on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Go.
Thank you for making us a part of your afternoon routine. People of Planet Earth, we appreciate you. The Huddle is back right here on 101.3 ESPN. Let's go!
All right, everybody, welcome back inside The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Arnie on his way back, so Brady and Rich here.
And congratulations to Bill from Colchester. He was the 5th caller through with today's right answer, and he is in line for that unbelievable package we have, sending somebody out to Fenway Park and get up close and personal.
Yeah, the ultimate Fenway fan experience. This was day 3 of the contest. So remember, we're doing this for 3 weeks, and here's exactly how this works, remind you. Because we had people calling off the hook, but we just want to make sure we make it easy for everybody. So, the ultimate Fenway fan experience. What happens is this. Rich, tomorrow you're going to come on in the morning in the 8 o'clock hour.
Right, early.
Sometime in the 8 o'clock hour, you're going to come on and you're going to say the Red Sox player of the day is somebody.
Yep.
Today it was Chris Sale.
Yep.
So the Red Sox player of the day is Chris Sale. And then you're going to tell people, listen, you know, in the noon hour and the 4 o'clock hour.
Right. Can't make it any easier. We're just going to tell you when we're going to call for you.
So we're telling, and then you're going to hear that cue to call, that promo. And if you get to be caller number 5 and can tell us successfully that player of the day, Ultimate Fenway fan experience is yours. Exclusive tour of Fenway on the field for batting practice. You're going to be there, box seats June 5th against the Tigers and a hotel in Boston. It's one of the, I think it's the most exciting promo we've had since I've been here.
Yeah, the boss is springing big time. Hotel in Boston? That ain't cheap, my friend. Believe me, I found out the hard way over the years.
Yeah, so.
No, really?
Yeah? Yeah, have you been?
Oh my gosh, Boston, downtown Boston hotels?
Woo!
That's why I got friends in Boston.
Yeah. Well, luckily, I have family. It was one of the few good things about growing up there. You know, I have lots of relatives to stay with. I'm kidding. I loved it down there.
Speaking about Boston, we were just talking with Buster Olney about Ichiro. Did you read the anecdote in Peter Gammon's story today?
It was a little bit like the Rozier.
Drew Bledsoe.
Eric Bledsoe, yeah. So, sort of the same, but even more bizarre.
So sometime in 2017, Ichiro was playing for the Marlins at this point, and he gets a text from an unknown number to him. And the texter says, "I got your number from Alex Rodriguez. I'd love to meet up with you sometime." And he goes, "This is Tom Brady." And Ichiro walks back to somebody and goes, "Who the beep is Tom Brady?" Ichiro, after 17 years in the pros at that point, had no idea who Tom Brady was.
Yeah, they basically been playing the exact same years. I mean, we think about it pretty much, their careers. But, I mean, Buster, we just got off the phone with him, and he said he can be a kind of reclusive, elusive sort of guy. And if you ever doubted that, we offer you Exhibit A.
He's so married to his craft that he did not know who Tom Brady was.
How is that possible? I mean, you could be in a cave and you'd somehow hear about
him. And I will say this. Remember, Ichiro has not spent much time in the playoffs in his life. So you talk about 0-1 with the Mariners, a couple of runs with the Yankees, and none with the Marlins. So a guy who was in Japan again when October hits. So you talk about football season. He's not in the States very often. So I guess it's conceivable to say that Ichiro doesn't know a lot about football, but to not know who Tom Brady is in 2017, that one, I mean, it's believable, but it's pretty inconceivable.
Yeah. It's like, who's Barack Obama? Who's Donald Trump? Never heard of them.
Yeah, right. So, you know, there was a part of the Tom Brady story, and I won't belabor the point, but there was a part of the Tom Brady story that we were talking about yesterday that we didn't really get into the angle that I really wanted to. So I have to bring it up again real quick. So the story is out there. Mike Lombardi, who used to work for the Patriots as an executive, said he thinks Brady is frustrated with the hometown discount deals and he wants to be paid like a top quarterback and he wants to be appreciated by the organization. And in his estimation, that appreciation would stem from more money. So my question to you is this. It's well documented that Tom Brady has been about the team for his whole career and he's taken those lesser deals and he's done those things so that they could retain a Wes Welker. He's been the ultimate team guy all along. If it is in fact true, at this point in Tom Brady's career, year 17 or whatever it's going to be, that he has now become somebody who wants more money, does that tarnish your perception of him at all in any way?
No, it's going to be pretty. He would have to go out and do something pretty ridiculous to tarnish this Patriots lifer's feelings about him. I mean, he had... You know, I don't usually think this way about athletes, but I was thinking about this after they got to the Super Bowl after beating Jacksonville, you know, in the AFC Championship game. It's just like, what athlete has given you so much happiness? Yeah. I mean, a guy I'll never meet, I'll never talk to, who doesn't know I exist, nor do I care that he knows whether I exist or not. But this is a person who has given me so much happiness for such a long time. And you don't normally think like that about athletes, but in his case, it's there.
802-655-6672, Town Fair Tire text line. If, in fact, Tom Brady is now about money to some degree, does it change your image of him? And the answer at this point in time is no, because I can look at it and say he deserves it. But if the Patriots don't win another Super Bowl because Tom Brady wanted more money and started eating up portions of the salary cap, then I would say yes, because what Tom Brady has told me all along is that I want to win the most championships. Championships are what matters to me. Championships is the separator. And if he's unable to go and get 6, 7, 8 championships, and the reason why is because, like so many other franchises, the quarterback is taking up a larger portion of the payroll than it should be, then I would say yes. If Tom Brady says, I want a massive raise, and as a result, we don't win because of that massive raise, then yes, I would look at that as a guy who I thought was selfless, costing his legacy a bit by being selfish.
And not to mention the fact that all that money that they have to give him because he's being, quote, selfish, and I couldn't possibly use that term for a guy who's had 15 hometown discount contracts or whatever he's had. But you could spend that money on a blindside offensive lineman so he doesn't spend the rest of his next season on his butt.
So I understand Tom Brady wants to feel appreciated. And in some ways, we talked about this yesterday. What is appreciated? If Tom Brady gets a massive raise, is that enough to be appreciative? If Belichick goes to his office and pats him on the back every day, is that what he wants to be appreciated? Right. We're not sure. But for a guy who has never been motivated by money, and he's told us, I'm not motivated by money, I'm motivated by championships, for him to now be motivated by money, according to reports, it is surprising. It doesn't taint my image, the image I have of Tom Brady, but if his desire for more money manifests itself as costing him championships,
sure.
Well, then it would down the line.
I just don't think Tom Brady's going to look at the end of next year and say, great, we just went 9-7 because I took $20 million extra dollars out of the payroll that could have helped us go 13-3. I just can't, it's like he's in such a unique position where he has a wife who makes $1 billion a minute. So he doesn't even have to care about that sort of thing. So he can use that situation to his advantage and certainly to the advantage of the New England Patriots financially. But I don't know. He's not a guy who had one good year and is demanding a max contract because of it. Well, I mean, he is completely a unique situation.
Nick in Plattsburgh feels exactly how I feel. He just says it with a little more ferocity than I just said it. He goes here, if Tom Brady was so obsessed with winning world championships, he would not ask for more. I understand he deserves it, but he has a much higher chance of winning another Lombardi trophy if he makes less. And that's exactly how I feel about this.
Yep.
So if championships is what he wants, then he needs to help continue to set up that roster for the best chance to win a championship, and that is him not dominating the payroll.
And that's why I think we need to let this play out. I mean, it's another situation where somebody's stating something, and we can talk until we're blue in the face about it, but we need to see what actually happens.
All right, it's the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I told you I wanted to bring that up, and you're like, really? More football talk.
It's not football season, and the draft is mercifully over.
I understand that, but it was a part of the story that we didn't quite get to yesterday about what our image and perception of Tom Brady is.
I get it. I listen to this radio station most of the day, and still, 2-3 months out of the last football game and 3 months before the next football game, 50% of the conversation on ESPN radio is about the NFL.
And real quick, because we do have a topic I'm very passionate about in the next segment that we have to get to, but I talked about this briefly on Champlain Valley Game Night yesterday, so I got to bring it up to you. Last year, the Red Sox first base platoon of Hanley Ramirez and Mitch Moreland was 25th in baseball in productivity.
Yeah.
This year, the first base platoon for the Red Sox of Hanley Ramirez and Mitch Moreland is second in productivity. Are these guys at first base closer to second or 25th? Because I'm under the impression that Moreland and Ramirez are about to start regressing.
Yes.
And that's going to cause a major dent in this team. Because with the Red Sox right now, I look at it and say, Betts, Devers, Bogarts, those three, and Martinez. Those four I feel really good about. The catchers, Nunez and Jackie Bradley Jr., I feel horrible about.
Yep.
And then Benintendi, iffy.
He'll get there.
And the swing guys are the first baseman. If they go south and you give me four great, four awful, and Benintendi in the middle, then that's not a good situation. If you're going to give me, those guys are going to stay great, then I feel a lot better. But this offense, I'm starting to get worried about.
Benintendi is the one guy out of the whole roster who I feel is going to be better than he is currently. He's been in the, he started horribly. He's 180, 190, and that just isn't him. He's up to about 240, 245. He's been striking out a lot. I think that's going to fix itself. He'll be hitting 275, 280, I would think. But as far as the first baseman situation goes, we're already seeing the regression with Hanley. It was a fun talk about, the TB12 and the 30-30 promises and all that, and he got off to a great start. He's lost about 30 points in his batting average, and the power has disappeared to a point over the last 3 weeks.
He was hitting 440 against lefties going into last night's game. He hit 170 against lefties last year.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's even worse than 170. Last year, he hit 140 against lefties.
Oh, my gosh.
So
I could hit 140.
He's hitting 300 points higher against lefties this year.
Yep.
Now, he might not be 140, but he's not 440 either. That's going to go down. And Mitch Moreland hitting 330 against lefties, that's not staying that way either.
Not only that, but he's hitting 330, 340 overall, which is preposterous because Mitch Moreland isn't an average guy. Never has been. He's a guy that's going to give you some pop. He's going to hit 20 to 25 home runs a year.
And play good defense.
And play very good defense, be a good guy in the clubhouse. But he's also going to hit 250 And, I mean, if the guy's hitting 330, 340 right now. That, I mean, Hanley, we've already seen it. Moreland, we haven't. I think you've got to ride him out as much as you can while this goes on. But I would imagine the market correction will have him about 70 points lower than he is right now.
Dan and Winooski on Tom Brady. I hate the guy, but he deserves to get at least one more big deal in his career. He's earned it, no tarnishing, in my opinion. Glennon Monkton, wow. Brady being Debbie Downer, big surprise. Really?
Glenn.
You said the exact same thing. You're worried about the first base split there, and I'm the one who's in trouble.
Well, that's Glenn. You gotta have lunch with Glenn.
Do you know Glenn?
No, I don't. It's just that he's always hammering on you.
I mean,
it's like that guy from Jeffersonville with me. I could tell him he just won $1 million, and oh, Haskell sucks.
I like Glenn fine. I don't know Glenn. I like him fine, but I'm sorry. I'm just telling you the truth. That last year, Hanley Ramirez hit 140 against lefties. This year, he's hitting 440. That's not going to continue. Mitch Moreland is a career 250 hitter right. against lefties. This year he's hitting, 333. That's not going to continue. So when the offense regresses and you're wondering why the Red Sox are now four games behind the Yankees in 3 weeks, then maybe you could point to this conversation that the first basemen aren't as good as they were.
Yeah, so you know, you're not quite like Arnie in the fact that every time you got one morsel of some prediction correct, you're not just all over it. But I suspect the facts are the facts. The numbers, what you just said are the numbers. There will be that correction, and I suspect we'll all be talking about this in 3 months and saying, you know what, that one we got right.
All right, you know who didn't get it right? The NBA coaches. This is among the biggest jokes in sports, and that's coming up next on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Everyone is listening to The Huddle. It's almost like we've got a quarter of a billion listeners per month.
All right.
This is The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, final segment. Well, before last story standing of the huddle
not
here.
Not on the street. Oh, sorry.
101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. Town Fair Tire text line 802-655-6672. George and Westford, Moreland and Ramirez are closer to 2 than 25. Both were injured last year. Ramirez crushes lefty prior to 2017. They will regress, but the rest of the lineup will get better with Benintendi coming out of his slump. So that's George and Westford. And then Glennon Monkton apologizes to me. He says, I'm just saying, let's enjoy what they are doing, and if it happens, it happens. I have no problem admitting if I am wrong, and besides Brady's choice in football teams, I've got no problem with them. So, Glenn, I accept your apology, and we're back on for Reuben James. So,
oh, I was going to say, does that get you out of having to pay for a free meal?
I didn't say I was paying, Rich. I just said,
okay,
we're back on for showing up right. and having the Paris Peace Accords or okay. whatever, the Paris Peace Conferences. So, But no, seriously, now I am going to get mad.
Great. Debbie Downer.
I try to be very rational. I think people have realized kind of where we are on the show. Arnie's loud and bombastic.
I'm the lovable loser, happy guy that everybody likes.
You're fanboy. And I try to be rational between the two of you. That's kind of how we fit in together on this show.
Uh-huh.
But with Arnie gone, I've got to take the mantle here on being upset. It got announced today, it got leaked out, that Dwayne Casey of the Raptors is going to win Coach of the Year as voted by his peers. Not the media, not right. players, as voted by his peers.
Right. Which is the actual, this is not the actual Coach of the Year voting. Isn't that done by media?
This is the NBA Coach of the Year is voted by, I don't know.
Okay.
I think at the NBA awards ceremony, this is the one that matters.
Okay.
Dwayne Casey of the Raptors is going to win Coach of the Year.
Ugh.
Okay, fine. If you really want to go that way. Brad Stevens got zero votes.
Yep.
Brad Stevens of the Celtics got zero votes from his peers. Are NBA coaches jealous? Do they not like Boston? I don't know what's going on. But the fact that Brad Stevens not only didn't win the award is appalling to me, but the fact that he got no votes from his peers right. is just flat out embarrassing.
And some of the people on the list that did get votes. First of all, how much better was Toronto this year? I mean, obviously this happened before the playoffs because Toronto just had their butts handed
yes,
to them.
Yes, this is all based on the regular season.
Okay, so, I mean, the fact that Doc Rivers got, I don't know how many votes he got. I would assume it was one.
I mean, here.
Doc Rivers?
Here are the guys that got votes. And I could justify why they got the votes here. Dwayne Casey gets the most votes. Why? Well, they were number one in the Eastern Conference. That's why he received votes, okay? But you know what he didn't do? He didn't play without one superstar right. or two superstars forever. Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan were around.
Take them off that Toronto roster and see how good Dwayne Casey is.
And then, oh, Philadelphia, Brett Brown, the team goes from, you know, whatever, 15 wins to 55 wins or whatever they have, 50 wins. I understand. He deserves some consideration. That's a great turnaround. Yeah. But you got the number one pick in the draft back. You should have been a little bit better. Then Mike D'Antoni. They were already good, and they added Chris Paul.
Yeah, stacked.
Give me a break.
That's a starting all-star team in Houston.
Nate McMillan, who nobody even knows is the coach of the Pacers.
That was news to me.
Paul George leaves, and the team still gets to the playoffs. That's why he's on the list.
I think it deserves a vote, maybe, or two.
Greg Popovich gets votes because, number one, he's Greg Popovich, and number two, Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili are shells of themselves, and Kawhi Leonard was AWOL the entire season, yep. And they still made the playoffs. Fine. Quinn Snyder in Utah.
Absolutely.
I understand that. You lose.
He's top three.
You lose Gordon Hayward,
yep.
And somehow you end up in a better position in the playoffs.
Yeah, and their second half was unbelievable. Nobody noticed it because they're Utah, but yeah, I would put Quinn Snyder somewhere in the top three.
Then Terry Stotts in Portland. Again,
stars.
Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. Yeah. They've got a team there.
Yes, they were healthy.
And then Doc Rivers dealing with everything he had to deal with, and Blake Griffin being out of there. I get that, too.
They didn't make the playoffs, did they?
No, I get why some of these people got votes. But tell me that Brad Stevens didn't get one vote from his peers is just failing to ignore what he did. Let's look at what Brad Stevens did. The Celtics had four returning players from last year's roster. So they were the top seed in the Eastern Conference last year. They turned over 73% of their roster. And, they were still top two. They lost Gordon Hayward 5 minutes into the season. Kyrie Irving missed 22 games. Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris each missed 28 games. They had the top-ranked defense. They won the most road games in the Eastern Conference, and he can't get one vote. I feel like Stephen A. right now. But how is that even possible?
Right. Just, are you going to go off like Stephen A.? I just want to know because I'm going to run.
I mean, there is no way that Brad Stevens should not have gotten one vote.
I love it which is most of the show.
I just don't.
No, I'm laughing about this, but that is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, not only should he have possibly won this thing. I mean, you've got to give at least the progression. I mean, they won five or six more games than they did the year before every year since he's been around. I mean, at some point, they're going to win 65 games, 70 games. It might even be next year if everyone stays healthy. And, you know, he's going to hit as far, you know, he's going to obviously raise the bar to the point where he can't get any better. And the problem, too, with this is that you cannot count the playoffs, which is too bad. That would have me irate. The fact that if what he has done with what's left of this team and gotten to the point of being on the verge of the Eastern Conference Finals and the Final Four of the NBA with this squad would be unbelievable.
The media does get to vote for Coach of the Year, and the media Coach of the Year gets announced on June 25th. I don't know which one is the more important one. I have to presume the media one is the one that counts. But the fact that Brad Stevens' peers fail to recognize how special he is and fail to give him any credit is appalling.
And knowing how we know about Brad Stevens, he doesn't seem like the guy that shares a whole lot. I mean, he's very, very withdrawn. He's got complete control of every interview without being a jerk about it like Popovich can get. Do you feel like he might use this as motivation somehow? I mean, how does a coach get motivated?
I don't think Brad Stevens cares. I think coaches get motivated when they're personally invested in their players and their players have shots taken at them. Yeah. I don't think Brad Stevens cares. Nick in Plattsburgh, if that's the premier Coach of the Year award in the NBA, then it's clear to me the process needs to be changed. Stevens deserved at least a quarter of the vote, if not more. Unfortunately, his success so far in the playoffs without Kyrie probably doesn't count, but still, come on, it doesn't count. You don't get the playoffs don't matter. Again, I think the media one is the one that really matters, but I don't care at this point. The fact that the coaches fail to recognize how special and how difficult what they accomplished this year is baffling.
The coaches award is the one you were talking about is the NBCA Coach of the Year, which is different from the NBA Coach of the Year award in that the league's 30 head coaches, as opposed to media members, which we've said are the individuals responsible for casting ballots. So the actual NBA Coach of the Year award will be announced June 25th in L.A.
I don't care that it's not the one that's the biggest one. It's still embarrassing.
It is. It's ridiculous. But it makes it even more interesting to see how many votes he's going to get among media members.
All right. When we come back, from a basketball coach who got snubbed to a basketball coach who's not coaching anymore. That's a local story. You're going to want to hear it next. Last story standing on The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Rich, local story right in your wheelhouse. Take it away.
Yeah, Tim Rice, the head coach for, very successful head coach for the Rice girls basketball team over the last several years, has decided to step down. He was at Rice for 9 years in charge of the girls basketball team. But for a lot of people that have followed girls basketball, they know that couple of terrifying incidents, one more than the other, perhaps because he walked away from one of them. But he had a history of heart problems. I don't know if it was cardiac arrest or had a heart attack right on the court during a game, last minute of a state, I think it was a semifinal.
State semi.
In front of a packed house at Patrick Gym. I remember sitting at press row right across the way, and he just dropped, and it was terrifying. Nobody knew what to do. He survived that barely with the help of a lot of people that just happened to be right there. It couldn't have happened at a better place.
Yeah.
And then this year, February 5th, he had an incident over at CVU. Interesting, the same opponent. And I think he looked at that, and I remember thinking, as someone who knows him from his days as the drummer of Downpour, which would mean nothing to you. Only old people would remember what that means. And so he's decided to step down. I think it's something that he probably wanted to do as much for his own health reasons and safety moving forward as he did for the kids. That can't be easy for him, seeing his kids, his players, traumatized like I'm sure they were.
Well, that comes from Alex Abrami of the Burlington Free Press. So thank you, Coach Rice, for the memories at Rice. And, Rich, we made it without Arnie. Big guy, he's back in the saddle tomorrow.
Go figure. We somehow survived.
And I'll have to announce the mistake of the day winner right at the top of the hour in Champlain Valley Game Night, which is next on 101.3 ESPN.